Education meeting, regular session. Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Here.
Mr. Dodds?
Here.
Mr. Butts?
Here.
Mr. Hunter?
Here.
Mr. Morlock?
Present.
How do you say it then? I pledge allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll go to the first public communication. Anyone need to speak that's not signed in? Okay, we'll move on to board work session.
Madam President, I handed out a few things earlier for the meeting. One of them was a letter that I received from a parent. Apparently, I wasn't the only one. So just wanted to make sure everybody knew that I got the letter, but you already do. Moving on, the other packet of stuff that I have for you is from the Ohio School Board Association, and it's regarding House Bill 70. I don't know if you guys have heard of House Bill 70 or not. Here's some information for it. Recently passed by the OSBA Board of Trustees was a resolution opposing House Bill 70, and the resolution is also included. OSBA is asking for school districts across the state to understand what House Bill 70 is doing and also have a resolution to oppose House Bill 70. And I would encourage everybody to read that, and we can discuss it a little bit more at the next meeting, but I would like us to seriously consider it. Basically, what House Bill 70 does is, for a district that's in academic distress, it forces them to have some kind of plan to get out of academic distress. And if they don't do that in a certain number of years, then a commission is appointed. A five-member commission, three of which come from the state superintendent, one comes from the mayor of the town that is most populous in the district, and another is a teacher that's nominated by the president of the Ohio School Board. That commission nominates or gets a CEO in place, and the CEO has total control over the district. Financial control, administrative control, control over contracts, everything else. Essentially what happens is, if you're in this academic distress for so many years, the board, the superintendent, and the treasurer are no longer in the picture, or could no longer be in the picture for running the district, and the teachers, the unions, negotiated contracts that have already been approved can be voided. So there's a whole slew of things that can happen. If after 3 years that the commission and the CEO doesn't do anything, the CEO can say, well, let's just turn them into charter schools and be done with it, and that's it. Okay, so that's it in a nutshell. Read it. There's more information on OSBA's website. They have the actual House Bill 70 that you can go through and read, but it's got a lot of bad things that can happen for school districts. We're not there, but Youngstown is, and there's a couple other districts that in the state that are. And in fact, it was proposed based on the problems that Youngstown was having and trying to get out of academic distress. So we need to consider it, and I feel we need to take some kind of action to let our legislators know that, you know, they're taking our control away and they don't care about the contracts that we're already doing.
Yeah, and what Ken left out is the school board becomes immature. It may still exist, but no longer represents the taxpayers because they have no say in anything anymore.
And Youngstown already had a commission that they put in place that was not effective at all.
Right there. In fact, it was in place for 5 years and things kept on getting worse.
And on this, Ken, it says, click here for the link outlining the changes that become effective October 15th.
Yeah. No, it was it was passed by the legislature, I think, like May or June. The governor signed it, of course, right away. And so they had to wait, I think it was about 90 days before it actually took effect. And the Board of Trustees got together in July and had approved it. September, I think it was. Anyway, it was after our other meeting, and I really didn't want to bring it because, you know, if the Board of Trustees isn't going to really do anything about it, they don't care. We need to fight for what our kids need.
Thank you.
thing I'd like to bring up. Tim, under your superintendent's report, I don't see anything about the dress code. I thought we were going to talk about that as well tonight. We're not going to talk about that?
On the 20th.
Okay.
We did not. We did put that on the agenda for tonight, and we technically can't talk about it because we don't have it on the agenda. It's a special meeting. That's for the 20th.
Okay.
And it can't be brought up in board work session?
No. You can bring it up if you want to have public communication about it, but it's not an agenda item.
We don't have the final one any to view to consider, so. Okay. Anything else? We got our packets. Thank you.
Yes,
Todd.
Capital conference packets.
Okay.
Have all the information registered for your different sessions, your credentials, your lanyards, everything that you need. I do still have everybody that wanted rooms. I think other groups will should be ready to turn.
Okay. What are the dates on that?
November 8th through 11th.
Anything else? Okay. We will move forward through the approval of board minutes. We will go right to the financial 5-year forecast. Mr. Winstein, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mrs. Cooley.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to refer to Mr. Detweiler to start the discussion here because we're going to jump right to the 10-year plan and discuss the 5-year forecast in amongst the 10-year plan, if that's okay.
Yeah, everybody that was in here was here in 2012-13 when initially created the first financial plan. And if you remember, that took several meetings. Hash out where we ended up. We actually had about 5 different meetings because we were talking about what levies we would put on. The one time we had to hold wall to walls, we're aligned with levy options, and we had to pick what we wanted to do. That was over the course of 2 years. We're required to do a 5-year forecast. Everybody in the state does that. We're not required to do a 10-year financial plan. We started in 12. I went through 21, 22, somewhere in there. Now we're at 16. We're 4 years in to that original plan. Why is it important that we look at it now? Well, one, we have a new treasurer. He's got to have his input into the process and say, okay, I want this 10-year start from this point. I think it's appropriate when you look at our finances, once Todd goes through it, you can see we need to kind of reset. I don't think we need to do it every year. We do need to do it this year because we're getting close to some pretty big milestones we need to take a look at. The difference between the financial plan and the 5-year forecast, the forecast, all you're doing is saying, here's what we think our numbers are going to be over the next 5 years, okay, and why. You put your assumptions with it. The 10-year financial plan, that incorporates the operational plan. As Todd flips through this for me, our agenda tonight, that was mainly for D&I. We will go through the mission and all these type of things. There's our mission statement. We have it on the wall there. So it's good to start out with that. The next slide, our goals. When we say district goals, these are the Board of Education goals that are on the website. Okay? Now, we have different district goals within our improvement plan, so I don't want to confuse those. Okay? The board's goals, we see to promote a safe, healthy state of the art environment in which to learn, maintain fiscal accountability through the best utilization of resources provided, increase student achievement in academics, arts, and athletics at the highest level possible, develop effective communication programs to keep the community informed, and to provide resources, guidance, and opportunities for staff and students to achieve in the 21st century. Okay? Those goals are a little dated now, but I still think they're appropriate. At some point, the board probably should take a moment to consider, do we want to revise any of these, or are they fine? I don't advocate we do that tonight. We've got enough other work we have to do. But that's what you'll find on our website underneath about us, that's out on the left-hand side. We'll take a recommendation statement in these goals. Okay. This overview, the financial plan, as I said several years ago, is the foundation for everything that we can do. It's not everything that we should do, it's everything we can do. Okay, there's a difference. That financial plan will lay the groundwork for everything we want to do in the operational plan. The operational plan is the plan we put in place to make sure we're striving towards those district goals that the board has laid out and meeting our mission statement. That pyramid has not changed and it will not change. That's structurally how we operate. The financial plan is the foundation. That's why we're looking at it again tonight, see if we need to revise anything. The operation plan itself. I've changed this a little bit from several years ago, with the defining the personnel facility and equipment needed to provide the programs offered to our students. Okay? A little twist on words, but from the last time. Anytime somebody says operational plan, you can get a lot of different definitions by the industry that you're in. For us, basically what we're talking about is our staff, the buildings that we provide for their students, and the equipment inside of those. Okay? So the operational plan we talked about tonight will address some of those issues and those concerns. District's operations, back in 2012, we had 1,282 students. Right now we have 1,252. Okay? That's better than where we were in 13 and 14, because we were still going down, and now we've leveled off. Okay? Now the key is to start going back up. Teachers, we have two more. Again, in 2012, I was trying to figure out how we got two more teachers. I think in 12, we had not put the coaches in place yet, the instructional coaches. And once we put them in place, then we replaced those teachers. So we added some teachers, and now we've scaled back a little bit, because we're down two. So I think that's how we ended up with the 98. Administrators, the same. Bus drivers, we're up to 22. Support staff, we have 45. Sports, we have 13. We have two clubs. That's a little different than back then. Your student activities, we've added one. We've got 28 buildings. School buildings, there's four. Courses of study, 12, but that's not correct. Our course of study, we actually have a lot more offerings than that now, but I'll be honest, I did not go out and find the course of study and go through and add them all up for tonight. Okay? But we have the BLA, which provides additional offerings, and I know we have more than that right now. Cafeterias are two. This is just to give you a general idea of how we've changed since 2012. And the financial activity. Todd's going to now take you through the 5-year forecast and bring you up to speed with where we're at.
Thank you, Mr. Bedwell.
You're certainly welcome.
I'll go through some of these slides here first, and then we'll circle back to the 5-year forecast. Just to give you an idea where we start this year, we started off July 1, 2014 with $6 million. We had $13 million in revenue, $14 million in expenditures, $650,000 in reservations. That's our budget reserve and our encumbrances, which left us with an ending cash balance or an ending balance available for appropriation of $4.6 million. So that's where we started off this year, is with that cash balance. This here is a graph that gives you an idea of where our revenue comes from. I will try to hang out the best I can here. The blue is our property tax. That's the majority of our revenue. That's local revenue. The red is the personal property tax. So you can throw that in with local revenue also. And this color here, what is that, turquoise maybe? Is our foundation funding. That's the funding we receive from the state, the unrestricted. Coupled with the restricted, which is like our career tech funding, that makes up our state funding. So these two amounts, our second largest revenue stream. On top of that is the property tax allocation. And the property tax allocation is our tangible personal property tax reimbursement, as well as our homestead and rollback, and 10% and 2.5% reimbursement. On top of that, we have our all other revenues, which that's just everything thrown together that doesn't meet one of those criteria, which would be donations, fees, any miscellaneous items. So as you can see here, I was trying to point out, in 2014-15, the foundation funding drops, okay, and then it climbs back up a little ways, and our revenue from property tax drops here, but then in 15 is when we see the big reevaluation that we got with the agricultural values increasing so much. That props everything else up, That's the only real revenue that we have growing, is our property tax revenue. Which you can kind of see, the blue goes from smaller to bigger. Everything else pretty much stays the same, with the exception of property tax allocation, which actually gets smaller. And that's the tangible personal property tax that we used to get reimbursed for, to the tune of about $450,000. In 16, this year, we'll receive $177,000, or $190,000, sorry. For that reimbursement, they reduced it that much, from 420 to 190. And to offset that, the state foundation was adjusted, the formula was adjusted, so we actually received more funds under the formula now. So we received more under the formula, but in total, we still received $13,000 less this year than what we would have received last year. Now, the state said in the budget that we're going to guarantee you don't receive anything less in 16 than you did in 15. So they are actually reimbursing us. They're providing that transitional aid amount of around $13,000 for us this year. So we do net out the same this year. Next year's a different story. In 17, tangible personal property tax gets eliminated completely. And we are completely on the formula at that point. So our amount of state aid grows. We go to about $4.9 million for state aid, from $4.5 in 2015 to $4.7 in 2016 to $4.9 in 2017. So our state aid is growing, but we lost that $450,000 in tangible personal property tax. So
why do you still have it on the graph?
No, because that's not just tangible. This amount right here is also homestead and rollback.
Okay.
And,
okay.
So that's included there also. But
well, just said tangible personal property, that's why.
Yeah, tangible personal property tax reimbursement is what goes in here in the property tax allocation. It doesn't go with tangible personal property tax. Okay.
So what you're saying, Todd, is the state's still going to have the ability to say, we're giving you more money, but they're taking money away from over here.
Right. It's a shell game. Yeah, it's kind of a shell game. So what that leaves us with is about $31,000 short in 2017. So that's when we had the discussions earlier where we said we were going to lose $600,000 over the next 2 years. We ended up losing $31,000 over the next 2 years, which is a victory in itself, you know, because it could have been a lot worse, but it wasn't. So that's where that's reflected. These are our expenditures. You can see, by and large, our largest expenditures are for personnel in the blue, followed by fringe benefits and retirement insurance, those items in the red. And the next is purchase service. Now, purchase service for us grew this year. So salaries and benefits didn't grow as much. But they were somewhat offset by purchase service, because we now contract for our speech therapist and psychologist through purchase service. So that's about $180,000 that wasn't in purchase service before. It's in purchase service now. So their benefits, they would have been in benefits. We're no longer paying their benefits. That's kind of included and built into that service contract. So that's what causes the purchase service to grow. You can see that right here, where that starts to grow in 16. That carries on out through the forecast also.
What else is included in purchase services?
Utilities are in that.
Yeah, that'd ESC. Be electric, your electricity, your propane.
ESC, anything we contract out is included in there. So, for example, last year, Liz Harms. This year, the site, our school site, we don't have one currently. We're contracting that out. So all those services that we're buying go underneath that category.
We have special ed aid services that increased about $30,000 this year, because when we're mandated to provide aids for students.
Does that include lawn care, snow removal?
Right. Yeah, that would be Allscapes. Would be another one.
Trash pickup.
That's our purchase service. The other one above that is our supplies and materials. It's kind of hard to tell there, I know, because this is all our revenue in the one, and it doesn't make up the largest portion of our expenditures. But it did grow this year quite a bit. It went from about $600,000 to $750,000 for supplies and materials. A portion of that is that, you know, we continue to provide for our staff very well. But the other one is our curriculum adoption that we had for the science. That was about $170,000? $130,000 that wasn't in the prior forecast. So we didn't necessarily know what we were going to be adopting, so we didn't have that budgeted for this year. So there was $130,000 that wasn't in supplies that is in 16 this year. Now, we did reduce that for 17 and throughout the rest of the forecast because we should not have as large of an adoption any other year in the forecast. After that, capital outlay and other objects, those items remain fairly steady. Capital outlay, we've been spending about $200,000 after capital outlay, and that really hasn't changed for the general fund. Now, the forecast. This is a snapshot, and I only expect you to read it. You can zoom in if you want later. But, this is just like the five-year forecast, but a 10-year view. So it's the exact same thing. It's just projected out for the full 10 years, out to 2026, which is actually 11 years, if you think about it. You know, not counting the year we're in, 16. And what that does is just give you a real idea. If we don't do anything, what happens in 10 years? We're in the hole $20 million if we don't do anything. And that's including projections for 1% salary increases throughout the life of the forecast after the end of the negotiated agreement. That includes a 8% increase for insurance benefits, which is what we're limited to. That's our liability that we're held to, that we know we won't have to spend any more than that. So conservatively, we budget for that 8% increase.
I don't interrupt you. Can you blow that up? I can show you. I see that bottom line.
Yeah, we'll see here.
That'll help.
Let's see what I can do with this. Right there, that bottom right line, minus $20,510,000. And what drives that, if we move up? Is right here, our excess of revenue, or our revenue that's under our expenditures. We're spending more than what we have coming in. And we have been since I got here. And we are continuing to forecast that throughout the forecast, which just essentially whittles away at your general fund balance year after year. So that's why when we start off with a $4 million balance this year, last year it was closer to $5 or $6 million, you know, that we were sitting on. And it just continually gets whittled away. And it keeps getting worse, you know, because the projected increases are increases on top of increases on top of increases. So we keep getting a little farther and farther away, which kind of leads me into my next slide. These are our cash balance, ending cash balances. Let me zoom out. You can see in 2009, we had what would appear to be a fairly healthy general fund balance of $7 million. And that has been whittled away, I keep saying that, using that term, whittled away to the point to where in 2018 is the last time we're in the black. And that's what we've been projecting and forecasting for quite a while now. It's what was in the last, actually in the last 10-year plan, it was expecting us to go into the red in 2018. So we actually did buy a year. You know, we got through attrition and some other cost savings, we were able to push that back to 2019. But now, you know, in the October forecast that we had earlier, the May forecast we had last time, and now this forecast here, it's remaining in 19 that we're going to be in the red. There's not a whole lot more that we can do after going through negotiations and making the attrition decisions, you know, to replace or not replace that we made, and the modifications to the insurance plan that we made for a savings. There's not a whole lot more that we can do and still provide the same level of services that we've been providing.
Would you like to talk to that for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is this, 2012. It's the same thing. In 2012, we said in 17 that we were going to be in the red right here. So we've been proactive back here, here, and here. If you remember, we did the early retirement incentive plan. We consolidated the schools, all those things. That combination bought us time. So now we're in the black here, we're in the black here, you go in the red here. Okay? What Todd's saying, and I agree with 100%, we're running out of those things that allow us to buy years. Okay? Now we've got negotiations settled. We had a good negotiation with the unions. We're going through 16, 17, 18. Okay? 18, we'll be talking again for 19, and you can see what a critical year that is. Okay, financially for us. I think what's built in there right now, Todd, is it ones?
Ones.
I interrupt you real quick.
19.
I appreciate you putting this up there. We all know this. We all know if we don't do anything, this is what's going to happen. Can we move to the point where it says what we need to do so we can get the discussion going on a little quicker?
Further on in this.
Yeah, because this is something you've shown that, you've shown that. We already know this. If we don't do anything at all with the things that happen in the natural school district, we're going to be in that. I want to know what we're going to do to try to get out of this.
All right. I apologize. Tim kind of let me know that, you know, there
are a lot of people. And it's not your fault. It's not your fault, Tim, but there's no sense going over this. We rehash this all the time. It's just time consuming. Let's go to
but we were brand new board members when we went through this. So for us, for me, I'm just going to speak for me. I'm not a finance guy like some of the others are, but it's helpful for me to refresh because we came in and you went through it. I didn't know what all those numbers entailed. So
here's why it's important why we're taking a little bit of time. The things we're going to be talking about in just a few minutes are different than what we talked about last time. Yeah. So we have to make sure that we're all on the same page. We all understand where our finances are. And that's why we had this special meeting, so we could rehash it, make sure that there's no questions. So when we start talking about some new options, you guys understand why. And we're real close.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's,
you're one slide away from the plan. Yeah. Right.
We're
okay.
Real close. But I want to make sure everybody understood that because this board was proactive and made changes back here, you bought several years. Okay? That's critical because there's been no new revenue other than the CAUB changes. And that was beyond our control. So since 2005, there's been no new revenue. And that's a critical thing to remember. But I just wanted to touch on that.
I appreciate it. But I wanted to go through it too. This is the first time that I've gone through it also, you know, as my spending plan or my 10-year forecast.
Thank you.
So I wanted to let you know that it has been updated. I tried to maintain the same format. So if it looks too familiar, if it looks repetitive, you know, it is what you're used to seeing because I wanted it to be familiar. You know, it's something you guys are used to seeing. I want to kind of keep it that way. Plus, Tim did a really great job with it. You know, it's not broke, don't fix it. So, yeah.
Right.
This kind of leads into the next slide, you know, and we'll be brief, but our expenditures outpacing our revenue. And so that divide continuing to get greater and greater to where we're, you know, separated by $2 million at the start, and by the time we get to 2026, it's grown to $9 million. So that's $9 million more dollars going out than what's coming in, essentially, is what that is. So that's the problem we have with the no new revenue, because expenditures continue to increase.
Right.
Okay. I will say that I did cover a lot from the five-year forecast in that discussion with the expenditures and the revenue for the 10-year plan. What I gave you, and I apologize, I didn't give you the assumptions, but they are in the board docs, but I didn't give you a copy of the assumptions. But the third page back is kind of an important page. It shows the changes from the prior year forecast, or the prior forecast, which was May's. And the red are where we came in under, and black is over what we had before. So you can see the first line, general property tax, we're projecting $346,000 more. That's that CAUB number that's now built into the forecast where that increased. Because we ended the year, if you look at the bottom of 15, $237,000 better than what we had projected. So that is a large part of that. The other thing to look at is where we do have more, the third line, line 1.035, the unrestricted grants and aid. That number is larger. That's our state foundation. But that is offset by the property tax allocation. it's reduced, where they're taking away that amount of funding in the property tax. So it nets out to the same in 16. In 17, it's $30,000 less in total, the amounts from the state. So that's the combination of the restricted grants and aid and the unrestricted grants and aid and the property tax allocation. Okay, those combined in 16 are the same as in 15, but in 17, it's $30,000 less. The other thing, once we get down into the expenditures, and it's just easiest to look at this changes page, you can see we came in at $95,000 less on this forecast than what we had forecasted in the prior forecast. And that's due attrition in 16 and administrative changes that were made. The same thing with retirement and pension benefits decreasing. Some of that too is, you know, we're paying for that fee-for-service service for our psychologist and our speech therapist. Their benefits follow them for that contract, so that reduces the benefits. Purchase service, you can see the next line goes up $357,000. We did not have that built into the prior forecast. We didn't know we were going to be going that route, but now we are. It's not more expensive to do so. It's just coming out of a different pot. The supplies and materials, that's the one we spoke on in the curriculum adoption. You can see where that's $137,000 more in 16, but only $16,000 more in 17 because we backed that off. We said we're not going to continue to maintain that level throughout the forecast. That was an expensive adoption, and we shouldn't have another one of those in the near future. Capital outlay is fairly consistent. We pretty much hit the mark on that, as well as the other objects. The one thing that wasn't in the forecast before was the transfers out. What that transfers out amount is that's what pays for our HRA. We transfer monies, the district's portion of the HRA, out of the general fund to the 023 account, and we pay the HRA out of the 023 account. So that $198,000, when we were with Beasley, with the gap, that number was more around $240,000. You know, so we've reduced it quite a bit. But in the course of changing that, it used to be up in the fringe benefits, and now it's down and the transfer is out. You can see in 17 that goes to 176,000. That's because now we're 90-80-80. We don't pay 100%, or I think it was 95% of the HRA. For negotiations, we pay 80%. So that's an additional saving there. And then the cash balance. You know, you can see we still finish ahead of where we thought we were going to be in 16 by $106,000. But that still doesn't do enough to push out 19 any further. What wasn't in the forecast either were the additional percent increases in the salaries for 17 and 18. We had 111 projected and ended up being 122. So that's about $240,000 that weren't in the prior forecast either. So when you see that number in 19 grow from the second page is the prior year forecast, by the way. Top page is the current one, the one we're proposing right now. That number grows from $662,000 in the red to $1 million in the red. That's due to the additional percent increases that weren't built into the forecast. That's due to the operating transfers out that weren't built into the prior forecast. That's due to the curriculum adoption, $130,000 that wasn't built into the forecast. So that's what caused that to grow, that amount to get a little larger. The other things I've attached, I'm not going to go through. It just kind of details our foundation funding. From the first page there is this one. That's our amount, our foundation funding. The total state funding is the 4.586. And the next page is what we're receiving now. So it went to 4.798 million. So that just shows you how that grows. And then the last page is just a funding simulation, or next to last page. Third page back is a funding simulation, and all that does is it shows you where they're taking that personal property reimbursement, that tangible personal property tax reimbursement away. At the bottom of the page, that's that $428,000. Next to it is what in 16 what they're providing us, which is about $190,000, and then in 17 it's zero. And so when you add that amount to the final funding amount above it, That's our total funding, and that's where you can see where it's the same, and then it goes down $30,000. So that details that. These last two pages, I'm kind of going to hold back and talk about as we get into the proposed plan process and the 10-year plan, because this details where we're at in regards to our millage and our voted millage and how far we are off the 20 mil floor. So we'll get into that. So with that, I'm going to hand it back over to you. Yep, that's fine. I'd like to run it this evening.
All right, now we're getting closer. Proposed financial plan. We're going to start out where we were several years ago. Why are we doing this? We'll be able to identify long-range financial issues coming at us. We'll be able to consider all our options, revenue, spending, program evaluations. Again, that means there's programs out there that we consider that we don't want to continue to have. It costs X dollars, they go away, so that's what the board so chooses. Gain community input on our planning process, and then develop the plan and communicate it. So we'll go through the same process we did last time. We will provide transparent financial planning. Academics are the focus of school, not the dollars. That was pretty critical, and I think we accomplished that. Think about it, over the last 4 years, we would talk about improvement plans and everything except finances. So I think we've done a good job of that. We have a stable financial foundation. One thing about negotiations, it was pretty clear. Here's our finances. Everybody knows what they are. We're solid. If you remember last time, we kept preaching security, job security, job security, making sure that, you know, we could keep what we had in the county. Staff recruitment ability. I don't know that when we put that up there, it was about job security, so we can recruit people at that point in time. I don't know that that's a recruiting tool for us now. I think it starts going back more to what we are paying, okay? And as we were very clear in negotiations, our ability to pay is based off of this financial plan and what the community will support.
I think it's important, I like to see, after we get through negotiations and we put forth the five-year forecast, where it does show us going into the red in 19, because we said we could get through 18 with the negotiations we were willing to sign off on. Mm-hmm. It got us just through 18. It didn't get us much farther than that. So
for the dollars we had, we gave the max we could, yeah. But I don't know if that's enough to help with this. And I'm sure Stormy would agree with me when you talk about salary schedule. That's what I'm saying is our salary schedule good enough to recruit the best? We're going to go through these pretty quick. Your millage, this is the millage formula. If anybody hasn't seen it before, it's standard. This has not changed school by school. It is what it is. I'm not going to go through that in detail. The 20 mil floor, again, Todd and I will tag team this, but basically once you get to the 20 mil floor, you can't go any lower. So even if your millage rate drops below it, the county auditor has to bring you back up to it. So you're always going to get at least 20 mils collected. And you will get growth off of everything inside those 20 mils. So if property values go up, we're going to get growth in dollars. We're not there yet.
Which is right now, we only get the growth on the inside millage,
right?
You know, for the new construction and the revaluation. We don't get any growth on those reduced outside millage amounts. And so what Tim's saying is once those stop being reduced, we start to realize the additional revenue on those amounts.
Your next slide talks to that, doesn't
it? Yeah,
if we want to get to the 20 mil floor, we're very close. And I think your next point talks to that on this one.
Right now that's where we sit, and that's where these last two pages in your forecast packet, it'll show you the next to last page. Shows, and I'm sorry if this chicken scratch, that's mine, but it's the quickest way to get it to you. But this is our amounts and rates that we see from the county auditors. And you can see there the voted in millage, underneath the outside voted millage, the second set of numbers from the left under residential and agricultural, that's what those are reduced down to. To the left of that is what it was voted in at. So for instance, our last one, the continuing current expense there that was voted in at 8 mils was reduced down to 3.97. That's where it currently sits. Now, so what that does is it reduces, it maintains the same amount of funding that we receive for that voted in millage, because we can't collect any more than what was voted in at the time it was voted in. So they reduce those amounts down. What we're getting at is, when you add those amounts up, that amount I have written down there is 20.06. That's where we're at. We're only 0.06 off the floor. Now, why is that such a big deal? If you look at the page, the last page, in the prior year, we were 6.18 off the floor, 6.18 million. We never dreamed, I know Tim never dreamed, that we'd see that big of a reduction in that year, in this year. And it was due to that large increase in agricultural values that drove that reduction.
If you remember in 13, you had these things on the wall saying, we'll never get that big of a reduction. But we went from $222 million as our base property valuation to $347 million in one swing.
But let me ask you this question. Sure. Because the big beef now within the farm community is to take away CAUV. So when if CAUV, because that'll be, you know, it's changed every 3 years too, or you get a 3-year cycle on that. So when that gets, because they'll screw with that formula again too in 3 years, because everybody's griping because their property taxes doubled.
No, they're going to screw with that now.
Well, I know they're going to screw with it now, but it won't take effect till, for 3 years. Now. But so you could very possibly go right back to effective millage at 21.
Well, I don't. You could. I suppose.
You could. It won't be as much because
what shouldn't be as much because residential should take up the slack where agriculture.
Right. You should see that growth and the revaluations in residential.
Correct.
So that if you see it decrease somewhat in the agricultural, the thing is, all we have to do is get 0.06, whereas that big valuation before jumped to 6 mil. You know, so
but my question,
growth in residential, as long as it's not offset too crazy by the CAUV, we can get there.
I understand, but my question is so you do hit a 20 mil floor, is it possible that you could be bounced right back up off of it?
Yeah,
if it gets, I mean, unlikely as it is, I grant you that, but.
Well, no, you had, when we went through the housing recession, you had property values driven down. You had a lot of districts come off the floor. You know, because the exact opposite works. You know, when the values are driven down, the rates are adjusted back.
Right. Yeah. Worst case scenario for us, and it's where you're going, is if CAUV stays in place, but they change it to where the property value on that ag land drops, then what that forces the county auditor to do is say, okay, last time ag values went through the roof, so I was able to decrease the millage rate. If she drops that ag value back down and home values don't increase by that same amount, then the millage rates will go up, and that will drive you above the 20 mil floor. That's what you're saying.
Right.
That's definitely something we have to consider when we get to the next slides, and you'll see why. Because you can't, in other words, what Todd is saying, you can't base our future off of, hey, we're going to get to the 20 million.
Well, and that's my point, it's is I just can't say that, well, you just can't
stay there.
You're absolutely correct. The only point that I was making, we've never been this close.
Right, no, I agree.
I don't think being at the 20 mil floor is going to give us the benefit that we need and keep us in the black. So, I mean, we're going to have to,
it's new money where we haven't had new money in a long time. You know,
but if we ask for a levy and have a levy passed, that's going to take us above the 24.
Right.
Depends on the type.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that's what we're getting.
Okay. So I'm getting.
Keep in mind, you said that. Okay.
I know. Yeah. There's lots of options. I'm not just saying that.
Because one thing I want this board to remember is that top line, which we keep avoiding.
What's that? To reach the floor. That line.
Where it says to reach the floor, districts can use emergency levies and or income taxes because they don't count towards the floor. Millage is millage to a voter.
No, I understand.
Mm-hmm. But you got to remember that, because that's the key here. I don't care what else we get talked to about tonight. In my opinion, because I've been down this road and Ken's been down this road, when you try to get people to vote for stuff, that's key.
Well, I agree. Well, the big thing is, if you put an emergency levy on there and it doesn't go against your 20 mil floor, then everybody thinks you lied to them.
Exactly.
And I'm not arguing, right.
Doesn't matter. We're going to add a millage. Wait a minute.
Because then when your property value increases, you're getting a 20 mil floor increase plus the new millage. So, I mean, I understand that completely. And I thought we did a pretty good job of trying to explain that when they were going for the last levy. You know, I thought but that was then and going forward. You know, I appreciate that and I understand that. Right. Well, the replacement was okay.
The replacement got voted down. Renewal.
Renewal.
Well, if you guys remember, and this board was the board that made that decision, we rejected everything that was put up there by Boone and Tim and came up with our own.
You did?
Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. With the, and you guys, if I recall, wanted to go for the 20 mil floor at that time, and we rejected that because we didn't think we could pass an increase.
An emergency, right.
Yeah. So we went for
renewal.
The renewal.
Replacement first.
Replacement.
And then it failed. We said, we'll go with the renewal.
Well, that's why this board decided was to go for the renewal, but make it a permanent. With the understanding that we knew in 2017, which was
again.
The exact date brought up in that meeting, mm-hmm. we would have to seek new funds. We would have to get back on. But at that time, the thinking was, we give the taxpayers some relief. They're not going to see us coming back every year
And
or three times in a year for a levy.
And we've done.
And we've held to that. We've held to it.
I'm sorry, that was the only point I wanted to make, was that,
which is why I think it's critical to start talking about it. Just like you said, try to find ways it's not going to be detrimental to the voter, and they'll vote for it.
Exactly. And as long, we've kept our promise that we made.
Absolutely.
And
but at that time, we also told everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're going to be coming back in 17, probably.
Right. We knew we were coming back in 17. Now, if that new money gets us to the 20 mil, fine. If it doesn't, it doesn't. We have to decide what we're going to go for in 2017, what that millage is going to be. I know you don't like that term that much, Dave, but we have to decide what that millage is we're going to see.
You guys are having
and then justify it.
Let me put you on the slide that continues on that conversation.
Okay.
Because you're right on target. We already talked about 2005 is the last time that the community voted to increase their taxes. We talked about putting 8 mil current operations levy on. We voted in May of 2014 to convert to a continuing period of time, and it was passed. So we did do that. Got that accomplished. Next slide. We have to pop it all up there. This was emergency operating levy. That was one option we put out there. We said, let's consider that. That was, I think the next button, uh-huh. There's a big red X on it. That was poo-pooed by the board, so you're dead on there. And then the next slide. In 2013, we were talking about an emergency operating levy. As early as May of 2016, we said we revisit it to see is it 2016, 17, 18, where does that fall? And that's where we're at tonight, is not to make that decision, but to begin having that conversation. Okay. These numbers are very rough. This 2.5 mils does not mean that we're suggesting we should put 2.5 mils on. So as much as I know Dean would like to put that in the paper, that is not the proposal to make.
Break his
pencil. This is purely a talking point for the board. How's that? We actually debated on just yanking that out, but I thought, no, leave it in, you can see what that would cost the homeowner annually of a $200,000 home. Okay. So that was proposed in 2013, so it's still valid. It's still an option. It's just a matter of where that millage is appropriate to take care of that deficit we have coming at us.
Along with the integrated valuation.
Right.
It could take less millage to accomplish the same task or the same goal.
Right. And I want to be clear, our meeting tonight is not to decide what we're going to do. It's purely to start the conversation. Okay. Now, this next one brings up another conversation that I have to have with the board. They have what they call a dual purpose levy out there. We know right now that we need additional revenues to operate as early as 19, okay, to survive.
So you'd have to start talking about doing that in 17 or 18, okay, having something on. A dual-purpose levy says, okay, you can put on an operating levy and a bond issue to build new facilities all in one vote. So the reason why that's up there is we need to start talking about, are we going to build new facilities? And if we're not, that's okay. I need to know that, though, because if you are, we have to start talking about it very soon. Because new facilities takes a good 2 to 2.5 years of conversation and consensus building and all those type of things. And if you're going to take advantage of the timing for when you need new operating dollars, you have to start talking and having that conversation now. I'm not proposing that we need to build new facilities. I'm saying if we feel there's a need, that conversation needs to start happening. Okay? What I would propose is that you ask me and Todd to start investigating and bringing to you information from the Ohio School Facilities Commission, exactly how long their projects last. I'm talking to our architects of choice about what their involvement would be and start putting together information for you so you can consider that and say, no way, we're not going to build buildings. You know, if the district has to come up with $10 million out of $40 million and it's X number of mills, we don't think the community is going to support that. Then I can set that aside and move purely over to the operating side and focus on that. Okay? So that's a different conversation than we had several years ago. But if you recall, we did say we will have to talk about new facilities and whether we want them or not. Okay? We're fine where we're at right now, but again, one of my goals, as you know, is to get enrollment growth. We've leveled off. The next day, we just take off. So we have to be cognizant that if we do start getting new students above and beyond where we're at now, to the tune of 150, 200 kids, we are crowded. And you can probably ask Kim, and she says her building is crowded now. So we're fine where we're at now, but if we start growing, we're going to be in trouble. So that has to be in the back of your mind. We will have more conversations about that. I put that up there for that reason. I want you to start thinking about, do we want new facilities? And if so, then we have to start doing more consensus building and meeting with, you know, with community leaders and things like that. So. That's just kind of more information.
Well, that's what you're saying, you know, would it be enough, you know, to accomplish what we need? Not necessarily. You know, when we're facing a $20 million deficit in 10 years, is $1.4 million going to accomplish that? Not necessarily, especially on its own, but it is new money. So that was the point being made there with the $20 million.
Now, to talk to Mr. Hunter's point about, okay, what's the plan? What are we going to do about this? As we kind of alluded to earlier, we're running out of things to do other than talk about new money. We've done all the tricks of the trade. The early retirement incentive plan, we've done those. HRA, we've done that. That saved us a lot of money and the employees. So all those things that we know about, we're running out of. Attrition, we didn't fill 2 more positions this year. How many times do we do that before we're starting to impact programs? Okay, so I just got some numbers that Todd put together for us on the forecast, the salaries and wages. 10-year total is $95 million. And you see what's modeled to develop that, and throughout the rest of it. The plan, the only thing that we have right now is you've got negotiations. We've got 1 more negotiation in 18. That doesn't help us for dealing with the 19 deficit. Merit pay stipend system, we've got it in the contract now that we will work with the unions to develop something. But again, that doesn't say that's going to save us any money.
And in fact, it probably won't.
Right.
What that's mainly for is recruitment, retaining good talent, rewarding good talent.
I don't mind an increase if it rewards
talent.
There you go. Right. I'm glad you said that because that's what we said in negotiations. That's what it's about. But again, that doesn't help us any. There's no secret weapon in the salaries. That's your largest expenditure. Benefits. Ask Todd to keep those in. You can see back in 12, we said a 12% increase. Then in 13, we dropped it down to 5%. And now we have an 8% because basically there's a cap built in the contract. If anything goes over 10%, we're liable for 80% of that. So it's an 8% increase that we have as a cap. There's no secret here. We want to go to the plan. We switched to a school insurance consortium, Southwest Ohio EPC. That's been very, very beneficial to the union members and us. We had a 0% increase this year, wasn't it, Todd?
Yes.
Plan design changes was going to the consortium wellness program. There's no guarantee that it ever saves you money. You hope it keeps your premiums down, but no guarantee. Increase the cost sharing employees, we put that there last time. Actually, that did occur with the 8% cap, because potentially the employees could have an additional increase on top of them if they don't make changes to the plan design.
Well, and the cost share was increased with the HRA also going from 100% to 98%.
Right. So we did do that in two ways. Again, no magic bullets here. So. What's stricken is what we had in there last time. We did pass the continuous renewal with 8 mil operating levy. The 2.5 mil operating levy 2016 for 5 years. That would be difficult for us to put something on in May at this point. Pass the renewal with PI levy November 2013 and communicate. I think that plan has been pushed out there as much as any that I've seen as far as a 10-year plan. We need to revise this so we can redo it and push it back out to the community. So, PI fund, we're not going to get into that tonight because that's not part of the forecast. And that's a whole different discussion. Timeline, I think it's pretty important. This talks to the history that you guys have been addressing a little bit. The PI fund, the 2.5 mil replacement, was proposed in 2013 and it was shot down. The 2.5 mil renewal was put on in 13 and passed, and you see the collection period. Okay, your operating levy was changed to an 8 mil continuous out there in 14, and it's going to be on forever now. Previously, it was always on for a 3-year period. So again, to Bob's point, we wanted to get off the ballot, and that helped us do that. Emergency operating levies. If we were going to do a levy right now, the smart money would be doing an emergency operating levy or an income tax, so it doesn't hurt your 20 mil floor chances. But again, we talked in 2016, back in 12, and now you're looking at probably at 2017, because we're looking at being in the red in 19.
Okay. And how much would we be able to reduce the millage if we passed it in 16? I mean, I'm looking at maybe, you know, if in 17 we want to go to 2.5, if we passed it in 16, would we be able to go to 2.0 or 2.2, something smaller?
Remember that 2.5 was based off of that $222 million total valuation. So we didn't run those projections for tonight, but we know to generate that same amount of money is going to be less millage because you have more bag with valuation.
Okay.
But to Mike's point, if that value goes away, then that millage goes up. So that's the challenge you have right now. Last time we had our challenges in projecting what we want to do, and we have different ones this time. So again, we didn't plan and didn't want to tonight to say, okay, we need to put 3 mils on in 17. We want to make sure you were educated tonight with where we're at, where we've been, what we've done to keep us in the black, and then start having that conversation. So you guys had to get refreshed before we can start picking things.
Just from my point of view, if we're going to put a levy on in 2017, we should wait until the last possible moment to decide the millage, because we'll have a much better idea the closer we get to putting that on the ballot. That's what the millage should be. Setting it now would be pointless.
I agree. It doesn't really... You're shooting in the dark, but what you do now is you start framing what you want to look at. Do we want facilities, new facilities? No, we just want to deal with operating. Okay, do you want just enough to keep you in the black a couple more years, 3 more years? Do you want to increase programming? Do you you want to increase pay? Those are all the kind of things you have to consider when we're down at 17 asking for operating dollars.
Getting to the focus groups, which I see is up there, I think that's a good path to pursue, because we need to find out if the community will support that 7 mil or whatever that ends up being to build new facilities. If we put that on and we don't have that community support, we're going to be back to ballot fatigue.
Yes. Focus groups.
Especially because
it's interesting going back, we talked in 2012,
the very next year.
Facilities planning team is now the facilities
struggling for a year
for fit
until your emergency level.
That's
if
an
you
internal
get it,
team.
Kicks in.
Yeah.
And we'll expand that group if we decide that we're going to go for new facilities to include outside folks. Right now, it's basically the administrative team is the facilities improvement team. We put together our list and we put in front of MPAC and see if there's anything that jumps out at there as they review it and say, no, we don't want you to do that, i.e. a new gymnasium over here or something like that, like we saw a few years ago. Okay. Financial planning team, basically I do that with MPAC. Anything we have financial that's new, different, that we want to put in front of them, we do. Superintendent's advisory is also MPAC. If you remember, that's kind of when Boone put that together, he was trying to morph those two things. But I wanted to bring you up to speed where we were at in 2012 and what we're doing now. Those are the focus groups that that was intended for. But again, our goal tonight was to make sure you understood where we've been, where Todd's going financially, and the important conversations we've got to have moving forward.
And the five-year forecast has been presented tonight. We'll be asking for approval at the next regular board meeting at the end of October here. So it's not tonight, but it's something
next
you
week.
Guys
will
look at. Yeah.
Just we will definitely have another meeting similar to this one, but you guys need to think about where you think we want to go. That's what I'm doing. I'll be talking about what I would recommend later, but you guys have to at least know this before we have that conversation.
Thank you.
Got any questions?
Questions? Okay. That was Todd's section, so we can move to the superintendent's report.
Yeah, the 10-year plan obviously was part of that. Grading policies. At the last board meeting, I put that in front of the board as a proposal. since then, got a lot of good feedback. A lot of good suggestions. The impact meeting was very good, well attended, a lot of ideas, things for us to consider. And what we ended up doing at impact, and I agreed to it, was I was going to ask the board that we simply take the grading policy recommendation that I had made there, we give it to the grading committee and allow them to work on it for this year. You say, well, why the whole year? Well, it's too late to make the changes that we wanted to do anyhow at that point. So we put it with the grading committee. Mrs. Grigsby is heading that up for us. We have quite the group that has agreed to serve on that committee. And we have a whole list that came from Impact that's going to be given to the grading committee to consider for this year. Everything from weighting to how much homework counts to a whole slew of things that the grading committee will be working on. They'll make a recommendation to me, then I'll make a recommendation to the board. And that will go into effect for next school year.
It sounds like that we won't be doing anything until next school year regardless.
But you'll be getting information and you'll get your recommendation from me this school year for next school year.
I happened to call Rebecca to find out what was going on with our progress book and stuff like that. And the person I talked to seemed to think that we can change right now what we've got. I mean, if we're doing the percentages or the numeric, that we can have that set up so that we get that letter grade and we get that GPA right.
There's
now
some parts of it you can change, some parts you can't. The pluses and minuses is the problem.
Yeah, and you have to factor in the community support. And if you read the superintendent's blog at all, then
would not be what you saw.
That was a blast.
Again, and the impact meeting. And the impact meeting. With the impact meeting, the community input there, they didn't want to change. They wanted
they support what was in the blog.
Well, yeah, pretty much. But they wanted more thought put into the change of grading policy, and they were totally against changing the grading policy mid-year, regardless if you could or not.
Right.
Well, but that was never the intention to change it mid-year. It was still to go into effect the first grading period. It just was going to be a...
But the impact, some folks at the impact wanted some things changed.
Like the weighting of the exams.
Now, but they didn't want the other things changed.
Or AP classes.
That's why I say it's all going to go to grading committee. They can do their homework and provide us a good recommendation.
And I think that's for the best, right?
So that's what we're going to do if the board sees fit.
I'm just under the impression that there was something that we would be able to do now with what we've got, that we would be able to get those GPAs or get those grades, you know, right now.
Can we? Yes, we could. Do I think it's appropriate now? I do not. I think we did hear loud and clear from a lot of folks that have a lot of valid concerns, and we've done everything else by committee and doing our homework and then making recommendations. We thought, myself, administration, that was a no-brainer piece, but apparently it was not. So I don't have a problem with us putting with the committee and analyzing it, doing our homework, and making a good, solid recommendation for next year.
Pause and come back again. Okay. Any other discussion? We'll move on to unfinished business. We don't have any new business. No new business. Any new business? Donations? No donations?
Executive session.
Okay. So, I move that we enter into executive session at 8:08 p.m. for the purpose of one or more of the following under Ohio Revised Code 121.22G. None of those sections are checked, so I'm going to say...
Number five.
Matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes.
I'll second that.
Call roll, please.
I'd also ask for number one.
And one, okay. To consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official, or the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or regulated individual.
Do I need to second that again? I'll second that again.
Thank you. Now will you call roll, please?
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Dotz?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Morlock?
Yes.
Mr. Carey, five.
We will adjourn our meeting 8:09 p.m. and there will be no further action taken. We'll have our next board meeting Tuesday, October 20th.